Hi, I'm Melanie Travis, founder of Andy Swim. Building a company is hard. There are belly flops, missteps, and issues that pop up every single day, and you have to just keep swimming. You're about to hear the story of a female entrepreneur who faced a sink or swim moment and came out of it stronger, smarter, and more resilient than ever. Today, I'm talking with Alexa Buckley, founder of Margot, a direct-to-consumer shoe company she started with her college roommate Sarah Pearson in 2015. Alexa, tell us a little bit about Margot.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being
here. Huge fan of everything you've built. And Sarah and I launched Margot 3 years ago, in 2015, with the idea of creating shoes that are as beautiful as they are comfortable. We kind of found that so often women are having to choose between style and comfort in so many different aspects of their life, and felt like this was particularly acute in footwear. And that women were often wearing a pair of shoes to get them somewhere and then changing into another pair when they arrived, either under their desk or outside their office building, and felt like this was outdated and inconvenient, and that there could be and should be a better way. And that there, could be a shoe that a woman puts on in the morning and feels beautiful and confident in, and she can start and end her day in. And as we dug into this, we realized the way to accomplish this is to focus on fit, which is, in so many ways, a really massively unmet need in footwear. And by providing women with sizes that they can't find anywhere else, from widths to an extended size range to a made-to-measure offering, we can offer them what we like to call like the Cinderella moment of kind of finally finding a pair of shoes that fit and can take them everywhere they want to go.
Okay, so you and Sarah started Margot right out of college. Can you just tell us about that briefly? Did you have other opportunities that you were thinking about, or why did you decide to start something right out of college?
Yes, we. So Sarah and I met when we were freshmen at Harvard. We were best friends and roommates, and we really dreamt up the idea for Margot during our senior spring, when we had a little time on our hands, and we had spent some time in the corporate world to witness that shoe shuffle that so many women do, kind of wearing a pair of shoes to go somewhere and changing when they arrive, and really were struck by this, and came back to school and started thinking about this perfect wear everywhere shoe and where you could find it. Something that was aspirational and beautiful, but that kind of met the demands of modern life. And so we started taking secret trips to New York to prototype. All the while, we did have job offers lined up. Sarah was going into consulting, and I was going into venture capital.
Oh, my
and
God.
And we, by the time graduation rolled around, we were so in love with the idea that we decided we couldn't walk away. And Sheryl Sandberg was actually our commencement speaker. And she kind of opened her speech to our class by saying, "What would you do if you weren't afraid?" And it was in that moment, it was pouring rain, and Sarah and I looked at each other and we knew what the thing was. So we called our employers that week, and we were lucky that they were supportive and understanding. And sort of maybe 3 weeks later, moved to New York, got a windowless office in Soho, and started building Margot. And, I think we had everything to learn because we were not only new to the industry, but we were new to the world. And, it certainly had its disadvantages, but I also think it had so many advantages. First and foremost, we had kind of no preconceived notions of the way that things should be done. So we could challenge everything, which especially in footwear, which is a historic and in some ways antiquated system, was advantageous. And then I think also, knowing what we didn't know, we were able to kind of seek out the experts in every piece, every bucket of the business, whether it was packaging or digital marketing or web design, technical footwear design, branding, PR, you name it. And we were so lucky in finding people that also believed in this idea. We heard no a million times, but we did succeed in finding people who were excited by the idea, that believed in us and were willing to take a chance on us. So that was the first thing we did. We assembled like a team of experts that could help us build out our vision and execute. We had the vision, we needed help executing. And that I think has served as a really important kind of fundamental piece to how we've thought about building the business, which was leveraging ourselves by aligning ourselves with experts so that we could be bigger and reach farther than we could, as two 23-year-old grads in New York.
You mentioned that you had a job lined up with a VC, so you obviously knew a thing or two about the venture capital world and sort of how startups maybe often get funded through venture capital. How did you think about raising money for Margaux, if you thought about it at all? How did you kind of approach that?
It definitely was helpful having spent just, I mean, if it was only two summers working in venture capital to understand kind of what goes through the mind of someone sitting on the other side of the table and, you know, what they're thinking about and what their priorities are. And when Sarah and I set out to build Margaux, we did raise capital first from angels and then another proper seed round from those angels and a few very exciting strategic investors. I think the most common thread between all of our earliest investors was that they had all been a part of building something, and they understood what it took, and they were our greatest champions, and they were also our greatest advisors, and they had built things in completely different industries than fashion, but they were in it with us for the long run, and that's exactly the kind of people that we were looking for, and I think especially at that stage of the business, exactly the kind of people that we needed.
Yeah, it sounds like you've approached everything really well. You should offer a class on starting a company.
Yeah, we have learned as we've gone, but it has been, an amazing roller coaster and so great to do it with Sarah and together.
Yeah, that's so great. I'm obviously a huge fan of your brand as well. So you've been at this for 3 years now. Was there a moment when you and Sarah just had to keep on swimming?
Yes, there are so many moments, sink or swim moments, I think, in the journey of building a business. And I think, that's what makes building a business so much fun and also so intense, is that the highs and lows are frequent and often within hours of each other. And so the energy of building something is, addicting, but exhausting in a whirlwind all at once. One particular sink or swim moment that stands out to me happened really early in the life cycle of the business. We had recently launched with a single product, and kind of all of the things we learned in those first few months was that our customers wanted more from us. They had their Margaux Comfort in their flat, and they're asking it in new colors and textures and styles. And so we went to our factory in Spain. We were energized and we were excited, and we found the most gorgeous Italian hair calf. And it was this beautiful, perfect leopard print. And so we said, this is the next shoe. This is our kind of foray into something a bit more luxe and very different than the original suede that we launched with. So we brought it back. We created kind of our perfect ballerina in this leopard hair calf. And then we toured the country, pre-ordering this shoe at events, at pop-ups, on our website. And it was met with tremendous response. We had hundreds of pre-orders. We were over the moon. And the shoes finally arrived after they were made one by one by hand in Spain. And, as one does, we tore into the box and we put on the shoes and kind of dancing around felt like this, something's not quite right. And we put another one on, we put another one on, and everyone's sort of having this like slow roll realization that something wasn't right with the shoes. And after a little inspection and some technical surgery, we came to find out that a very small but important piece of the skeleton of a shoe was missing in every single pair. And talk about a high and a low all within an hour of each other. We realized that the hundreds of customers that were waiting for these beautiful leopard shoes were not going to get them because we could not deliver any single pair of these shoes. So we were faced with a kind of decision, like what were we going to do about this? And I think what we came to realize was that moments like these are, as catastrophic as they feel in the moment, also an opportunity to turn things around and make it a pretty lasting impression on your customers. So we decided to write a personal note to every single one of these customers explaining what happened, deciding that if we were honest and kind of very open about exactly what had happened with their shoes, we were able to humanize this ourselves and the brand. And we offered to, remake each pair by hand, of course, again, with a very generous discount. And much to our surprise, the reaction from customers was pretty astounding in that, people were understanding because we were honest. People were appreciative because we'd give them a discount. People were excited to have a direct line to the brand because we had now created a dialogue that was more than a company speaking to a customer. It was a person talking to another person. And it was a huge learning moment, not only to, you know, this is what you do in the face of the massive issues, but that this was going to be, you know, our approach moving forward. We were going to be a customer-centric brand. We were going to treat each of our customers from this sort of concierge mentality and try to continue to achieve this at scale. And it's something we think about, you know, daily now.
That's amazing. That's quite a story. And it sounds like you guys handled it incredibly well, although I can only imagine the like sheer panic that was probably happening during those moments.
Oh my goodness, yes. I remember where I was standing.
Oh my God. Maybe actually might be worth setting the scene a little bit. Like how long ago was that?
Yes, just tell we had just graduated from Sarah and I, you know, working alone in a two-person windowless office in Soho to a slightly larger office in Chelsea. And we received the box. Most of the shipment had gone to our warehouse. It was hundreds of pairs, but the order for press and for samples and for the team members came to the office. And it was dark and it was winter. It was several months after launch. And I remember all of us standing around having that very quick, immediate sort of stomach drop realization. And I think, you know, what we've also come to learn is that, you know, as much as building a business is about creating, it's also about problem solving basically every day. And, you know, the ability to think on your feet and to take problems, which come up, you know, multiple times a day, and if not all hours of the day, to take these problems as an opportunity is like a very important skill, I think, to kind of hone and continue to develop as an entrepreneur. And as a team. So yes, I remember exactly where I was standing, but we turned it around.
Were there moments during the crisis when you were like, this is it, like we're done? Or did you always kind of have your thinking cap on and realize you could make it through?
You know, the immediate shock was the most difficult because we were in such a high, the shoe was in such hot demand. There was hundreds of people wanted it. Oh my goodness, we've done it. We've created something that people really want. And, you know, to falter and to misstep felt like a uh-oh. Mm-hmm. But no, I think with the thinking cap on, you know, I think all entrepreneurs share that kind of common commitment to like resilience and determination, that it wasn't like, oh, no, we're not going to last. Like, okay, what are we going to do now? And, you know, I think the beauty of coming full circle on that is that shoe is now one of our most popular shoes. It's very hard to keep in stock. And so we did figure it out. And it is what we always hoped it could and should be for our customers. But we did learn along the way.
Wow. I'm super impressed. Good for you on all of that. During the depths of it, were there things you turned to, either, you know, books or mentors or just Google searches to help? What helped you kind of figure out the next steps?
Yeah, I think, you know, our community of mentors and advisors that really come in the form of other entrepreneurs have always been the most helpful kind of sounding boards in moments of, you know, trying moments and moments of success. Because, you know, even if we're creating different businesses and working in different industries, so many problems kind of are consistent across. And we turned to them and said, what are best practices in customer service? How can we go above and beyond and wow every single one of these people? To make what could have been an unfortunate experience a really exceptional one. And like, what can we do to make sure that they walk away as loyal customers, not as people who have been disappointed? And we learned a lot very quickly in, you know, talking to as many people as we could about best-in-class practices in customer service. And in those conversations and in that research, also came to realize, you know, how passionate and how laser-focused we wanted to be about customer service and how that would inform so much about what we did and the way that we built the brand moving forward.
Yeah. I think the point you just made about speaking with other entrepreneurs, I mean, that really resonates with me. And one thing that at Andy I've been able to tap into, which I imagine you probably do now, that I didn't have access to over a year ago, are these Slack groups. I don't know if we're probably in some of the same ones. Of just so many different entrepreneurs. I always go there to say like, hey, you know, how do you do XYZ?
Yes, totally. And I think, you know, a few years ago, one of our advisors gave us a piece of advice that said, you know, make sure you're spending more time with entrepreneurs who are building nothing like Margot. because mm-hmm. I'll be able to, you know, have the 10,000 foot view, not the right in the weeds,
yeah.
and ask you the questions that seem really obvious, but yeah. when you're so focused on the details, you might not ever have thought of.
Yeah.
And so we do make a point of doing that and spending time with people who can, you know, poke holes in our ideas mm-hmm. or challenge us and push us, because it makes us better and it pulls us out of the weeds. Mm-hmm. And they've been, you know, hugely helpful, I think, as we've continued to grow the size, the scale, and the complexity of the business.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Tell us a little bit about managing stress during that experience. Were there things that, I mean, how did you sort of balance your sanity when you were like, oh my God?
We are real big goal setters at Marco. So we are very goal oriented. We do weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual goals. And personally, what keeps me focused is, you know, I think the task at hand can seem sort of insurmountable and sometimes, but to know exactly what you need to do to get there is a lot easier to digest. So we often, you know, break things into smaller chunks and pieces. And so that's exactly what we did. We said, okay, the next task is to sit down and draft an email to each of these hundreds of people and then figure out who's going to do what. And by breaking it down into chunks, keeps you focused on executing and I think less in the sort of stress of the moment.
Margo sounds like a great place to work. Yeah. Are you guys hiring?
Yes, we are.
Oh, there you go. That's very organized. So if this hadn't happened, do you think that Margo would have gone in a different direction or be in a different place right now? Or,
you know, I don't think it had changed the trajectory of the company in any way, but I think it was, you know, a real learning lesson and, you know, and sort of something that I alluded to earlier, which is that there will be these moments in building a business for every business, and the ability to create opportunity and to see opportunity in these moments, not to see or understand or feel defeat, is a really important mentality, because those moments are going to happen. And I think by developing that and honing that and sharpening that instinct of, okay, what can we do to turn this around or make this an opportunity for us, was really a great lesson to learn so early in the business. You know, more tactically, I think we learned the power of customer service, you know, pretty tremendously in this experience, and what we could do to actually create customers who now are, you know, very valuable customers, because they've had this dialogue and relationship with the brand that has gone above and beyond to turn a situation around for them. And what we've seen is that we were able to create customers that became even more valuable than the average customer over time, because we're able to take a situation and go above and beyond to make it right. And these customers had a dialogue with us, a relationship with us, and are still extremely loyal to this day.
That's a really valuable lesson to learn early on. So you handled everything, it sounds like you handled everything really well. What advice would you offer to other entrepreneurs who might be facing a similar challenge?
I think I would advise any entrepreneur that's in a consumer business, at least, to, you know, always think about the customer first. I think if you can think about the customer first in any decision you're making, whether it's about the website or your packaging or the product, it simplifies a lot of things, and it kind of distills and quiets the noise of all of the things you might have to consider to make these decisions, and can help realign values. So in, you know, the case of the sink or swim moment, when there were so many different factors that we needed to deal with, our factory and our customers and the warehouse and shipping, and we could kind of come back to center and say, but first the customer is the most important thing. It sets priority. It sets, you know, intention and discipline for the brand. And I think at the end of the day, if we're doing everything with our customer in mind, then we're doing the right thing. And everything else will kind of fall into place.
I could not agree with you more. How has this customer-centric approach informed your strategy moving forward?
I think this was a huge learning lesson for us, because our customer-centric approach was really apparent in kind of the way that our customers shop with us. So you know, our shopping experience is very intimate. If you can imagine, we have, you know, a narrow and a medium and a wide width for you to try on. And we have this sort of Cinderella moment when you finally figure out what size you actually are. And the same online, we kind of walk you through with a digital quiz with all sorts of kind of handheld experience to make this feel very special. But I think through this experience, what we learned is that we can extend this kind of concierge-like shopping experience beyond just the shopping interaction and in so many other parts of our business. So today, you know, customers get personal handwritten thank you notes. Every single customer who reviews us or who responds to one of our NPS surveys. You know, we all pitch in writing these cards because it takes a long time. But it means something to our customers. And we want to make sure that as we scale, we can continue to think of ways that we can have a dialogue with our customers, that we can make them feel special, that we can make them feel like they're a part of something, and that they have a direct line to someone at the brand. So we do this in our stores. We do this, obviously, on our website. But now we talk about this and we think about this at our office a lot. And it, you know, sometimes takes the form of a letter. It sometimes takes the form of what we like to call surprise and delight. We have a special budget set aside for doing things for customers that they wouldn't expect to receive or hear from. And I think it all started with that learning moment of when you can surprise a customer, when you can turn a situation around, or you can, you know, amplify a good one, there's tremendous value to be had and a relationship to be made.
Or even just when you show your humanity.
Yeah.
That's very exactly. Well said. Where do you want to go on your next vacation?
I love to hike. So last summer I was hiking in Switzerland with my family, and I'm not a hiker. I can hike. But what I found is that it was the very first trip where I was so off the grid and so unplugged. I was so far from any kind of technology that I felt sort of away for the first time in a long time. And in kind of achieving that and getting to this place, I felt more creative than I felt in a long time. I felt more relaxed and more energized to get back to work. And so I realized that that is the kind of vacation that I want to do again. It was sort of meditative in that way. So I am hoping to go to the French Alps to hike.
Oh, nice.
Get a little adventurous and hike for a bit longer this summer. But yeah, I think that's where I'm hoping to go next.
Oh, that'll be great. The French Alps are beautiful. So are the Swiss Alps. That's great. What is a nugget of wisdom you could share?
I think one thing I've learned as, you know, a 23-year-old launching this brand is that you don't necessarily have to be an expert in what you want to do. You just have to be willing to work hard enough to figure it out. And I think, you know, so much about, you know, being an entrepreneur is learning as you go and reacting quickly and being agile and making decisions fast but pivoting faster. And I think kind of knowing that for all of our hires that they're going to learn as they go, continue to go and build with us, has been a huge unlock, has been, I think, definitely inspiring and a little bit liberating.
That's really good. I mean, this might be totally off topic, but it, you know, when I speak with other entrepreneurs, or especially ones that haven't launched something yet, their biggest concern in speaking with people seems to be that someone's going to either take their idea or do their idea, which drives me nuts personally when I hear it, because like none of these ideas are like some sort of robotic AI, deep tech, like, you know, patent pending things. Like anyone could think of coming up with a swimsuit company, and it's not really about that. It's about workshopping your ideas with people and understanding what the customer wants and what she's missing and where those gaps are. And so I think, you know, just getting your idea out there, talking to people, and figuring out, you know, what could work, what couldn't work, and also just like trying stuff all the time is super important. So
yeah, we like to think about it as our ingredients, we call it. So, you know, if, you know, Margot is the fully baked cookie, what are the ingredients that make Margot so special? And yes, you have to have something that's defensible or hopefully that no one else has done or is doing currently, but it's usually a combination of certain ingredients. So, you know, obviously being footwear's first size inclusive brand is the most important, but you know, our interpretation of luxury and democratizing that is a very key ingredient to the inclusivity component, which is a key ingredient to kind of our transcendent product that speaks to all ages and geographies. And so when we think about our ingredients, you know, Margot isn't Margot without them all. And I think so many companies, the special sauce is in the ingredients and the way that they're able to put the puzzle pieces together to make something that is, you know, if not groundbreaking, really compelling and really special.
Ingredients is a great way of putting that. I'm going to take that back to my team.
Go for it.
That's great. Okay, so now we'll wrap it up with a few quick fire questions.
Uh-huh.
You have a work crisis. Who are you going to call?
My dad.
Good answer. What's your most important resource?
Time.
I agree. What's the most important personality trait on the Margot team?
Resilience.
Wow, very good. How can people find you? Obviously, maybe give your website,
yes.
Social handles.
Our website is Margot, spelled MARGAUXNY.com. And then our Instagram is MargotNY as well.
And in store?
Yes, and in store, if you're in New York, our flagship is on Bleecker Street in the West Village. And then we have pop-ups kind of popping up around the country, different times that you can find on our website.
Yeah, that's awesome. You guys have had an incredible ride, and congratulations on everything.
Thank you, as have you.